You're listening to an audio resource from Vineyard Church of the Rockies in Fort Collins, Colorado. We are joining God's mission, transforming all things, and you're invited. To learn more about us and how you can connect, please visit VOTR.church.
The series is called The Unexpected King. The Unexpected King. I think for Christians, especially if you've been following Christ for any number of years, this Christmas narrative, the birth story, might begin to feel a little bit like old hat for you. You've heard it so many times. You've been around the story so many times that maybe even the story's become quite normal for you. But familiarity can be a friend or a foe, because sometimes what familiarity can do is it can take away the fascination or the wonder behind the actual events of the birth of Jesus Christ. And my hope through this series is that we can all begin to recapture some of that fascination. We can all begin to recapture some of that wonder. Because as you read these stories, as you flip through the early pages of the Gospels and you read about the birth narrative, I can promise you, it is anything but normal. It is anything but expected. Right? As we retell the story of Christ, my prayer is that all of our hearts rise up again and experience the wonderment of the birth narrative in a new and a fresh way. I want to say to the parents, tell the story of Jesus' birth to your children. And as you tell the story and as you turn the pages, be fascinated by the angelic activity. Be in awe of the power of God. And allow yourself and your family to wonder again about all of the heavenly happenings that you find in these pages. Because it's unreal how many unique and unexpected ways God shows up in the birth narrative. All kinds of unexpected events. We're talking about dreams and visions. We're talking about angelic visitations and amazing gifts from foreign strangers who came to the birth of the newborn king, who seemed to know more about his birth than some of the people of God even knew. The birth of Jesus is totally unexpected with every page that you turn. If you don't believe me, just find someone who's never heard the narrative before and try to explain to them everything that took place. Open up with Matthew 1 and read through the birth narrative to someone who's never heard the story of Jesus. I'm going to read a few verses in Matthew 1 this morning, and I want you to try just as best as you can to imagine that you've never heard this story before. That it's the first time you're hearing this story in your entire life. For some of us in this room here this morning, or maybe on the live stream, it is the first time you've heard this story. And I am honored to be able to read it to you for the first time, because you are in for a treat and all kinds of curveballs that God might throw you. Matthew 1, verse 18, this is how the story begins. This is how Jesus the Messiah was born. His mother Mary was engaged to be married to Joseph, but before the marriage took place, while she was still a virgin, she became pregnant through the power of the Holy Spirit. Joseph, to whom she was engaged, was a righteous man and did not want to disgrace her publicly, so he decided to break the engagement quietly. As he considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream. "Joseph, son of David," the angel said, "do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child within her was conceived by the Holy Spirit. She will have a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." Just a couple of verses later, in verse 24, it says that Joseph then woke up from the dream and did everything that God told him to do. Imagine hearing that for the first time. Imagine hearing that and going through all of that and then having a dream and waking up and just doing everything the way that you were instructed. I will never forget Natalie and I explaining the birth of Christ to some of our friends when we lived in Kansas City. Before Fort Collins, we worked in Kansas City. We were involved in ministry in Kansas City that primarily discipled gang members from a gang in our area called the Bloods. And this is how we started ministry. And I'll never forget sitting down with them and sharing with them the story of Jesus' birth. I didn't know exactly what to do, so what I just did for this entire church, I started with Matthew 1, I started reading the story, and I realized there was a miss, so I grabbed the nativity scene in our house, and I started using little figurines to explain the story. And when I got to the virgin birth, with a living room full of gang members from the Bloods, imagine a mixture of laughter and tension. It was a totally unexpected story. They never thought they would hear that in their entire lives. This story has to be told over and over and over again. We need to point out the miracles. We need to point out how close heaven and earth came in the birth of Christ. We need to point out Emmanuel, God with us. And we need to never let that wonder and fascination leave our hearts or our minds. The story needs to be told. But in order to understand all of the unexpected turns of the birth of Christ, it's also helpful to understand the context into which he was born. And much of the context of Christ's birth, the time leading up to his arrival, can be summarized with one word: silence. Silence. The last book of the Old Testament is called Malachi. If you start in Matthew and you turn to your left, there's a blank page, and then it goes to Malachi. When I was growing up in the faith, I always called him Malachi. I thought like an Italian prophet snuck in there or something. It's going to be stuck in your head now. But you go from Malachi, you go from Malachi to Matthew, and you turn one blank page. At least that's how it's in my Bible. You turn one blank page, and we can sometimes mistakenly think that because Malachi and Matthew are right next to each other, it's just one page turn, that these events were right next to each other, but that's so far from the truth. There were 400 years between Malachi and Matthew. In this one page turn, there's 400 years of history, 400 years of the people waiting for Jesus' arrival, wondering if God was still moving. In 400 years in one page. Many scholars would call this one page turn the intertestamental period, the time between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Others have started to call it the silent years. And we call it the silent years because for 400 years, God didn't speak through any new prophets. He didn't send any new messengers to the people of Israel. He was just relying on the previous messages. See, this was a time of incredible waiting. It was a time of incredible silence from God to the people. And a lot of history took place in that one-page turn. Empires conquered empires, rulers conquered rulers. There was one ruler named Antiochus Epiphanes. He actually conquered the land of Israel and sacrificed a pig in the temple of God, which was the worst thing that you could imagine for the people of God. And that offended so many Jewish people that a warrior-like leader named Judas Maccabeus led a revolt against the empire and rulers of the day. He was successful in this revolt, and he created a sense of freedom for the Jewish people once again. They were free to practice their religion once again. They rededicated the temple and cleansed it after that sacrifice from Antiochus. This is the origin story of Hanukkah, by the way, the Maccabean revolt. It's also why in first century Israel, Judas was such a popular name, because he was like a hero to the people. This liberator who brought to them salvation from their oppressive rulers, but the freedom only lasted for just so long because eventually Rome came in and conquered Israel again and enacted a brutal and oppressive regime where the people of Israel were found suffering in silence once again. 400 years of silence. 400 years without dramatic events, without God's active movement. This is the context. This is the regional kind of struggle that was happening before the birth of Christ. Silence, struggle, pain. One brief moment of victory with the Maccabean revolt, only to be crushed again for years and years and years. When you think about my own life, I honestly can't imagine what this was like. I don't even like not being able to feel God's presence for a handful of days, let alone a few weeks or months. I don't like it when I open God's word and I don't feel his presence or his love for me for just a couple of weeks. Can you imagine your entire life and then the life after you and generation to generation of complete silence? God's not speaking. This kind of silence can erode your faith and diminish your hope. Hope deferred can make the heart grow sick. And I have to wonder if those delays in hearing from God, the delays of the anticipated arrival of their one coming Messiah, began to even make their own faith waver and hope grow dim. If their delays in following God made them start to wonder if the Lord was even paying attention anymore. Right, some of us have known this very pain, maybe not for 400 years, but maybe it's been a decade. Maybe it's been a couple of years. Maybe it's been a few months where you've experienced incredible silence from God. You know the pain of unanswered prayer, struggled or delayed responses from God. You know the battle of a wavering faith. Wondering, is God still listening? Is God still moving? Is God paying attention to my life? Why is it one thing after another? It just keeps piling up. Is God active and does he move anymore? Or am I left here to fight all these battles on my own? These are the questions that many of us have asked in the moments of silence. And this is the same context to which Jesus was born. Silence, delays, even periodic times of oppression and darkness. But it's often in moments like these when God begins to show up. Silence often precedes breakthrough. Not always. Not always, and for many of us, the timing of God is frequently longer than we might hope for or anticipate, but silence often does precede breakthrough. Time and time again, you read about it in the scriptures, that what feels like a time of silence or pain or struggle can somehow mysteriously in the kingdom almost simultaneously be the starting point at which God begins to move in your life. Where God is preparing your heart, preparing your life, preparing your relationships for some kind of spiritual breakthrough. This morning, if you find yourself in a waiting period, if you find yourself in a silent season where you're wondering what God is up to, you're wondering if he's moving, maybe it's even a time of disillusionment, either in your own relationship with God or maybe your relationship with the church. Then hang tight. Continue to hold firm to your faith and stay alert because silence often precedes a breakthrough. As I mentioned, this is the context. This is the storyline of humanity when Jesus showed up. Jesus broke into our world when all seemed quiet, when all was beginning to seem lost. And when he came, not only was the timing of his arrival unexpected, but he came in a different type of way than the people had hoped. The promises of God didn't break into their culture, didn't break into their life like they had hoped and they had expected. The people, truthfully, had forgotten about the prophecies of the birth of Christ. They only remembered the victory prophecies. And so they were looking for another Maccabean revolt. They were looking for another warrior king who would throw off the oppressors of Rome and give them their freedom once again. This is what they wanted. They wanted freedom from this militaristic and political oppression they were experiencing. They wanted a warrior who would rally all kinds of people behind his war cries. But instead, what they got was a baby crying in a silent night. They wanted the cries of a warrior king, but instead they got the cries of a baby. One tucked in a manger, largely overlooked, easily forgotten, and seemingly irrelevant. Jesus came in an unexpected time, but also in an unexpected way. Not only did he come as a baby and an infant, who's totally incapable of overthrowing their Roman overlords, but he came without money, he came without influence, he came without power. This is our king. As the cultural prophet Freddie Mercury would say, it's just a poor boy in a poor family. This is our king. This is who we worship. This is who we gather to honor and bring glory. He's just a poor kid, born into a poor family. It doesn't explicitly say that he grew up in poverty, but from the cultural context, it's pretty safe to assume his family didn't have a lot of money or power. Wealthy families had places to stay. Even if all of the places were occupied, wealthy people had friends. They had clout. They had relationships that they could rely on so they didn't have to stay in the overflow when the inn was all occupied. They had people they could talk to. They had influence they could exercise. Jesus had none of that. His family had none of that. They were relegated to the manger. See, this story is so unexpected in so many different ways. The time that he came and also the way in which he came. Even if you look at Matthew 1, you can realize that his family line was incredibly unexpected. I mean, this might come as a surprise to you, but I usually skip the genealogies when I read them in the Bible because they're ridiculously boring. Right? Maybe some of y'all love genealogies. That's the new small group. It's like, for 8 weeks, we're just going to study genealogies. Like, there's going to be 2 people that sign up for that group. But actually, the genealogy of Christ is, these 16 verses in Matthew 1, they're fascinating. Because they reinforce this unexpected reality of our newborn king. Matthew 1:1 starts this way. This is the record of the ancestors of Jesus the Messiah. Like I said, that's usually my cue to skip forward. But in Matthew, you read it. In Matthew, you read it because you learn that the unexpected king had an unexpected family line. The lineage of Jesus is full of liars and cheaters and adulterers, prostitutes, failures of kings, pagan worshipers, abusers. The list goes on and on and on. Imagine being an original reader or an original hearer to this story, and you come across some of these characters who were known for being incredibly far from God. And then you realize that it's through that lineage that Jesus came. You would have been shocked. We lose that in 21st century America, but they would have been shocked. This is good news for some of us, that God can take a broken family line and create something beautiful. This is probably good news for many of us. I know it's good news for me. We talk about unexpected. Jesus came in such an unexpected way. He didn't even have a biological father on earth. You know, I read verse 18 earlier where God had kind of anointed Joseph as this stand-in dad, almost this adoptive father on earth. We know Jesus had a father in heaven, but on earth it was Joseph. And he was kind of adopted into this family. He couldn't choose it. And Joseph loved him and led him in such a powerful way, but questions of his legitimacy followed Christ throughout his entire life. As he grew and as he matured, you can see the Pharisees even take a couple digs at him later in his life. It makes you wonder, did Jesus look like his family? Did Jesus look like his brothers? Did he look like Joseph? Or did people look at Jesus and almost instantly know he didn't quite fit in the family where he was set? Maybe you've never thought about that. I think about this a lot. Part of the reason I think about this is because I grew up with a brother who was Mexican-American. Same mom, different dad. If you can't tell, I'm pretty light-skinned, light-haired, light-eyed. My brother's pretty dark-skinned, dark-haired, dark-eyed. We're brothers. And when we would go to the playground or we would go to the store, we would have family events, and my brother and I were sitting next to each other, an onlooker could see that we were acting like brothers, that we loved each other like brothers, but that we didn't quite look like brothers. And these kind of questions followed my brother and I throughout our entire childhood. These are the same questions that followed Jesus, and yet God chose to show up in this very unexpected way. These are questions that some of you have experienced personally. This is how God chose to show up in humanity. Continuing the unexpected arrival, though, it just continues one after another. The family of Christ had unexpected trials and pains that they had to experience at a very, very early age. Matthew 2, verses 13 to 18. I won't read it here this morning. Read it on your own this week. But it's one of the most overlooked passages in the birth narrative. It's one of the most overlooked passages in the entire birth narrative, and I don't blame anybody for overlooking it. You'll read it, and you'll realize it's not very Christmas carol-y. No one writes a carol about Matthew 2:13. It's actually one of the most tragic stories in the entire Bible. In Matthew 2:13, we read that the ruler of the land at this time named Herod had found out that a boy was born who was destined to reign. And in a satanic-filled rage, he ordered a newborn genocide of any boy two and under in or near Bethlehem. Jesus was likely the only survivor of anyone in his age group and his gender in that time and in that space. In a dream, right before that genocide occurred, God sent an angel to warn Joseph that his family was no longer safe, that they had to escape, that they had to flee their homeland and escape to Egypt. And so like Joseph had done in exercising this faith and obedience, he woke up and he took his family to Egypt, escaping a tyrannical ruler, fleeing for his own safety and the safety of his family, living in a foreign land with nothing but just a couple strange gifts that some strange men dropped off at their house shortly beforehand. Sounds a lot like what we might call refugee status in today's culture. Fleeing for your life with nothing to your name. Living in a foreign land, not knowing the language, not knowing your way around. Jesus' family was under real threat and fear for their lives, and it wasn't for a few years, Herod ended up dying, that they were allowed to go back to Israel. The story of Christ's birth is one unexpected turn after another, after another, after another, and yet these are the pages we read. This is the King that we worship. This unexpected king who came in an unexpected time, in an unexpected way, and did unexpected things. See, his birth, it's actually a foreshadow of his entire ministry. Because if you go from birth narrative and you keep reading in the Gospels, you see Jesus doing unexpected things over and over and over again. He didn't come as a warrior king, conquering all the enemies in his path. Instead, he came to serve, to care for the needy, to feed the poor, to clothe the naked. They wanted a Maccabean revolt. They wanted the lion of the tribe of Judah, and Jesus is all of that, but he came and he sacrificed his life on the cross. He is the lion of Judah, but he died the sacrificial lamb for you and for me. See, this unexpected king shows up in unexpected ways, and we can often miss his activity and miss how he's moving and what he is up to, especially when silence is our context, especially when we're surrounded by pain or struggle or we haven't felt or heard from God in a while. All of a sudden, we can begin to misinterpret what God is up to or misapply his truth and his activity. It's oftentimes in moments of incredible silence that we expect God to show up in our life maybe this way when he's doing another thing. Or we begin to manufacture some kind of spiritual revival within our own heart, but God's actually doing something a little bit different. He's always at work. He's always at work. But it's easy to miss it if you're expecting one thing and he's moving in another way. This definitely happened to the Jews. This is almost a kind and gentle warning to us today. Matthew reminded us that 750 years before Christ, the prophet Isaiah foretold this exact birth. This is Matthew 1:23, retelling the prophet of Isaiah. It says, "Look, the virgin will conceive a child. She will give birth to a son, and they'll call him Emmanuel," which means God is with us. Isaiah made it so clear. This is how the Messiah is coming. This is what you can expect, but in the waiting, in the turmoil, in the pain, in the silence, the Jews lost track of passages like that. And they began to expect something different. And I think we all need to take caution at that, because if we're not careful, we'll do the same thing. If we're not humble in heart, we'll do the same thing. We'll begin to misappropriate God's activity in one way or another. We'll begin to assume that he's going to move in one way or another when he's doing maybe something completely different. We'll assign breakthrough in our life from our own strength and our own personal power instead of relying on the Spirit. See, it's easy to get distracted when we think we know what's best, or we think we know how God ought to show up in our life. When in reality, it's about waiting and seeing. It's about having a humble heart and almost expecting the unexpected. This Christmas, imagine what it would look like if you slowed down enough to find God's real activity in your life. Imagine what you might see if you walked slow enough and walked humbly enough to anticipate God's unexpected ways. You might be really surprised by how God is moving in your life, who he sends into your life, the kind of gifts that he presents to you in the coming weeks. I'll close with this short story. There's a scene in Prince Caspian, one of C.S. Lewis's famous works that comes a few books after The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And in these books, the children kind of represent all of us in a way. And this amazing lion named Aslan represents Jesus. There's a scene in Prince Caspian where a girl named Lucy approaches the lion. She's hurt and dismayed and maybe even a little bit confused. See, she had wanted Aslan to show up in the exact same way that he had showed up before, roaring and powerful, scaring all of the evil enemies away and saving everyone, just like she had seen him do before. But Aslan responds with such beauty and gentleness and tenderness even. And he says, he kind of almost pulls her close and he says, it's hard for you, little one. It's hard for you, little one, but things never happen the same way twice. Things may not happen for you this time around in the same exact way they happened before. There might be similarities, there might be feelings that bring a sense of nostalgia or remembrance, but they'll probably not be exactly the same. God's still moving. God's still active. He's still doing things in your life, but like the birth narrative, it might be in very unexpected ways. As a follower of Christ, and even as a church family, as we approach Christmas, may all of our prayers be that we would begin to see God's unexpected activity. You might be experiencing a time of silence or delay or struggle. You might be hoping for a breakthrough or a sudden change or some kind of renewal of your faith. Or it's quite possible that your life is just moving forward at a nice, slow pace, that you don't have a care in the world, that things are generally going well for you. But this Christmas, don't be either lulled to sleep by the goodness that's all around you, or don't be fraught with fear if you're in a time of silence and pain. Instead, look for heavenly activity. Look and listen for his unexpected voice and search for his unexpected activity, because you might be surprised by what he says or how he shows up or what he invites you to participate in this Christmas. Let's pray.